Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello everyone, we got a very special show again today. I've done shows with SB3 now, I've obviously done shows with Alex McCarthy, but for the first time ever I'm joined by Stephanie Chase. Steph, I know you've had a big move this week, so how are you doing? Are you able to stay awake?
I'm exhausted. I'm very, very exhausted. But, you know, it's really hard work moving, I find out. And I wish I had some big AEW wrestlers to help me, but I didn't. And I did it all by myself. And it's been difficult, but I'm pretty much there. But yes, I was so tired. I couldn't even stay up for Dynamite last night. First time ever.
Yeah, that's commitment. That is. And I know people in the States might be nice, and yeah, like Dynamite isn't too big of a deal, but for Steph to watch Dynamite every week, she goes to bed about 4, so yeah, you must have been shattered.
But I was gonna say my bedtime after Dynamite depends on how good a show it was. If it was an average show, I'll go to bed straight after. If it was an amazing show, I'll probably be up for an hour thinking about it. So yeah, it's usually a late night on Wednesday.
So when did you end up going to bed after the Bullet Club reunion, I guess, last week?
Ooh, last week?
That must have been a late one.
Yeah, that was an after 4 one. That was an after 4 one. But the one where Kenny, where Kenny, Don Callis, Sting appearing, that was like 5 after 5 a.m., 5:30 time. That was one of the like latest. That was, I wanted to throw a party that night. Like, I was like calling people after 4 saying, hey, are you up? Do you want to have a virtual party with me? You know, it's crazy.
That's what being a wrestling fan is all about. We love to see it. Mm-hmm. Guys, obviously, if you want to get in your Ultra Chats, head on over to wrestletalk.com/wrestle2. If you thought a particular match over these past couple of days has been great that you want to tell us about, or anything really you want us to debate and discuss, send it in over there. Obviously, we've got a bit of news to cover today, but there were two shows last night, NXT and AEW, which we'll be diving into, as well as some hot takes and maybe some way too early predictions what we think is going to happen at Revolution, because I didn't realize we're only 6 weeks until the pay-per-view now, which is
we're 6 weeks, but we have the Beach Bash in between, which will probably throw a spanner in some of our predictions. But yeah, 6 weeks, that's not too long.
Not too long at all. I mean, by WWE standards, they in 6 weeks they still have another pay-per-view to get through, but with AEW, because they are they take 3 months between. So yeah, we'll delve into some predictions for that. And so let's start with a little bit of AEW chat based on last night's show. I thought was once again another brilliant show. Probably wasn't as good as the week before, but was still just fantastically consistent. Was there any particular matches or moments that you really enjoyed when you watched it this morning?
Yeah, when I watched it this morning, there was a couple of things that stood out to me. Firstly, just for a little segment, I liked the little Dark Order bit they had, you know, backstage with Hangman Page. I really liked that because I love the Dark Order so much and what they've been doing on Being the Elite. And it looks like they're kind of going to bring that more to Dynamite than we've seen before. And the whole like love in between Hangman Page and John Silver and Alex Reynolds, just like, I love that so much. So I was really happy to see that. I personally really liked the waiting room, not the whole segment, but just Britt, you know, herself. I thought she was great. Reba was great and really funny. Some of her little digs that she got in at Cody were great. I really liked seeing her getting that like bigger platform to do something there. And then setting up a match between her and Thunder Rosa is very exciting to me. And then also, you know, Brian Cage and Darby Allin. That was awesome. Like Darby, he can take a bump. Like he was just the perfect little like rag doll. He was like one of those little you know, the little goth dolls you can get, the like little soft ones. Just being thrown around all the place by Big Brian Cage, and then the like ending with Sting coming out, and then you had Darby's amazing theme music, but with Sting Snow. I loved that. A lot. That made me so happy.
Yeah, I know we spoke about it last week on Twitter. I was happy there was a bit more progression with Sting this week. They actually got physical for the first time. I think that was nice. Yeah. It's sort of, they're painting him as a bit of like a, I guess like a guardian angel for Darby Allin. He's like basically just looking over him, protecting him whenever he needs, which I think is quite a good story that will mean Sting doesn't always have to get physical to stay relevant, which is quite important.
Yeah. I love it. Like he is like Sting's crow. Like he is Darby's actual crow, just looking over him, protecting him. And I like that little bit of him just getting involved to like even the odds. He didn't come out at the beginning, but he came out when he was needed. And that was great.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was actually very smart for AEW to do the the weigh-in segment last week, because it just emphasized the size difference between those two, which was just shown further in the match, and I think really helped it. I liked FTR versus Marco Stunt and Jungle Boy. I think Jungle Boy came off looking really good. Marco Stunt looked really good, to the point where I've not been one of those people that's been really anti him, but sometimes when he's done some stuff, I'm like, listen, like, it isn't realistic. There's Rey Mysterio small, and then there's Marco Stunt small. He's like really small. But I think
I'm taller than Marco.
No, I'm really small, and I think I'm taller than Marco. I think my dog, if you'd stand him up, would be taller than Marco. But I think that the way they did it with him being used as like a weapon, I guess, by Jungle Boy for parts of it, and then FTR just clobbering his head off, I thought was really good. I thought it was probably his best match in AEW. It was sort of how he's looked. And I just thought it was a very, very solid show. My only issue is with the Inner Circle stuff. Listen, I love the Inner Circle. I think they're great. Their segments are so funny. But I don't think they should be deciding who the tag team is, because they already have one of the best tag teams in the world in their ranks. Like, I think it should just be a natural assumption, I guess, that LAX are the tag team, because like, they're like one of the best in the world. And I think that for all AEW's great points, and there are so many, one of the biggest sort of missed opportunities has been Proud and Powerful over the last couple of months. Would you agree with that, or do you think I'm just being a WWE diehard that's got to find something wrong with AEW somewhere?
Well, I think you are that, Louis, but that doesn't mean that you're wrong in this instance. I think maybe the problem is that AEW, you know, they have the Young Bucks, who are EVPs. And I think that they kind of just focus on one tag team thing at a time. And that's probably going to revolve around the Young Bucks, especially when they have the titles. And then Proud and Powerful, they got put in the Inner Circle, and it did kind of leave them not being used as a tag team much. I felt that for this segment, firstly, I thought like the swerve was going to be that they would tell Sammy, actually, you're the odd man out because Wardlow's got a team with Hager.
I think that's what's going to happen next week. I think that's what we're setting up, and it would make sense. Yeah. But then I guess you'd want them to win. I mean, it does set up a lot of options. I will say that. I legitimately don't know who's going to win. It could be, I think Sammy and Hager won't win, but out of the other two, it could be either of them, realistically.
I think a lot of it comes from just having a group and having Jericho in the group and wondering what to do with them, and kind of the easiest way seems to be to put them in teams and seems to be able to do tag team stuff and get him to team with MJF seems to be the easiest way to tell the story that they're trying to tell within the group.
Yeah, I think that there are so many options. They're doing this Sammy stuff really well, like the whole fact that calling Jericho a tag team slut with all his different tag teams was brilliant. I just thought it was very funny. Yeah. And then I want to ask your opinions on the Kenny Omega stuff. Obviously, we've got the AEW debut, in-ring debut of the Good Brothers. What did you think about it? Because initially, I was a bit like, I didn't think that was how it was going to go. I thought they would play up the whole, like, Gallows and Anderson, Young Bucks, and Kenny Omega as a faction for a little bit longer before playing up any sort of, like, dissension or any sort of conflict between the group. But that seemed to come really early, like a week after they'd done everything. Initially, I was a bit against it, but then I thought this is actually not early because we've been playing up the dissension within the group for months now, since All Out, since even before, and since when Kenny and Hangman were a tag team. So what were your thoughts on the whole thing?
Yeah, I kind of feel like the way the Kenny character has been, even before we got to this stage of his alliance with Don Callis, he has seemed a little bit untrustworthy, and the Bucks have seemed to be people that are trying to give him the benefit of the doubt as his friend. So last night it did surprise me that they went in this direction so quickly, but I feel like it makes sense. I think that they're maybe trying to tell the story of the Young Bucks maybe coming to the realization that they don't really know Kenny like they think they did, and maybe that could lead to something with Hangman coming back and realizing that maybe Kenny was the problem all along rather than the problems he had with the Bucks and the rest of the Elite. So I quite liked it, but I would say that they'll probably kind of tease things a bit more in the coming weeks. I would say maybe next week or Kenny will try and like justify what happened to the Bucks or something, and we'll just leave them feeling a bit confused. But yeah, it was interesting to go with this already, but it was cool to see the Good Brothers have their in-ring debut on Dynamite. Yeah, I'm sure they've been waiting for, that since before they left WWE.
Probably from the minute they signed their extensions with WWE in the summer of 2019, they were like, we made the wrong decision. But I agree with you. I think it was cool to see. Like, it was just, they felt like an invading force. And then when you have Moxie coming out at the end and everyone from AEW, like the Lucha Brothers, you felt like it was, all right, these people are defending AEW, which is really hard to do when the promotion hasn't been around for, like, it's just over 2 years at this point.
Yeah.
And Dynamite's
but I think that. Around. Oh, well, I was going to say, to your point, I think that AEW, both on TV and off TV, real life and kayfabe, have built up quite a good sense of community, especially among the good guys. We're helping. It doesn't seem out of the ordinary that you would have all these people come out. Even last week when you had like Brian Pillman Jr. and people jumping the rails and stuff, it seemed like a likely thing that would happen. But I was just thinking, you know, the good brothers, sometimes things really work out for you and not in the way that you thought, because they end up going to Impact instead of AEW, which maybe they thought, or the rest of the world thought, was a bit of a step down, and now they've ended up being in Impact, being able to be on AEW and in this hot storyline that has everyone in the wrestling world talking, which they may not have been in if they had just gone straight to AEW.
Yeah, they're involved in the hottest storyline in wrestling without question. I think it's like the Roman Reigns stuff is pretty good, but in terms of storylines, I think this is by far and away the most exciting. There are so many avenues it could go down. And for the first, like, I thought I was looking forward to Slammiversary last year when there was all those Impact debuts, but compared to now, I'm looking forward to Hard to Kill so much more. Than that. And it should be a good show, obviously, with them facing Rich Swann and Motor City Machine Guns. I'm not even talking about the storyline options or anything like that. Just the match will probably be very good because it's six exceptionally good wrestlers.
It's crazy what we're getting right now in terms of this in-ring talent mixing it up. And is that pay-per-view is going to be one of the most interesting to watch in a long time, to see how people react to it, how many people are watching, and just how good this whole angle has really got over.
Yeah, I think we've actually got a string of like four quite exciting pay-per-views. We've obviously got Hard to Kill, mm-hmm. the Royal Rumble, which for all WWE's yeah. thoughts, a Royal Rumble is always, for me, it's the most it's exciting the pay-per-view
best. Of the year. Me too. That's the thing. The thing about the Royal Rumble is you don't even have to book it well, really, because the excitement is just who's going to come out, who's going to come out. I'll never forget. Sorry, carry on.
I was going to say, so my brother is 18, so he's was supposed to be doing his A-levels this year, but obviously with everything going on, they've been cancelled. So we came to the realization, we were like, we can watch the Royal Rumble together for the first time, because he's still in school, so we've never done it. And we're like, yeah, we're looking forward to that. But go on, you were going to say Royal Rumble memory, which are always the best.
A Royal Rumble memory is watching it in a bar in London, a Royal Rumble party, and I think it was, who was it that came out? Either Bubba Ray or Devon Dudley came out, and a guy stood up, screamed, and removed his shirt in the middle of the bar and like threw it. And then once, you know, everything calmed down, he was in the ring, he had to go quietly and just pick up his shirt and put it back on and sit back down like a normal human.
The Royal Rumble makes people do crazy things. I remember, so I was in a student house last year for university, and Edge came back. Mm-hmm. And I tried, like a student house, walls are paper thin. So I tried so hard just to not say anything or not react. And I could just see myself smiling. I was like, you know what? This is what it's about. So we got the Royal Rumble. Yeah. Then we've got NXT, the TakeOver show, which on Valentine's Day. And then we've got AEW Revolution. So a string of four pretty good pay-per-views, which obviously will be all over on Wrestling Daily, bringing you news, reviews, everything. So I want to while we're on the topic of AEW, there was a bit of confusion, I guess, with Sonny Kiss. So Tony Schiavone seemed to suggest that Sonny Kiss was injured on the Dynamite post show on YouTube yesterday, but Sonny Kiss said on Twitter, I'm not sure how this narrative started that I was injured, but baby girl is totally okay, just an FYI. And I think Tony Schiavone said he saw Sonny in the changing room, in the trainer's room, and was a bit confused. So yeah, at least Sonny Kiss isn't injured.
Oh, I've been really Sonny's okay.
I've actually been really impressed.
Yeah, Sonny's great. Such a great talent.
And I think when you've got like such a stacked tag division, people like Sonny Kiss and Joey Janela and the Varsity Blondes, like we saw, they're so important that you don't have to, like we see with WWE all the time, you don't have to have, if the Revolution match is, I don't know, just say it's FTR versus Young Bucks. We don't have to see that 16 times in the weeks leading up to the pay-per-view. We can see different matches. So I think AEW's tag division is so unique in the sense that it's got like an upper card, like a main event scene, an upper mid card, and like a lower mid card that is just I could talk about AEW's tag division for hours, but we will move
and then
on.
It's got the inner circle floating around it.
don't even and then you've got possibly trios titles being introduced. No, I can't. I'm getting too carried away with myself.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We've got some Ultra Chats here to dive into, which I will do now. We got one here from CM Chris. Hey, Louis and Steph, AW Dynamite was another fun time with some crazy stuff like the TNT title match. Holy smokes, that table spot. Also, happy 50th episode of Wrestling Daily. Shout out to Carol again to make her smile. It is actually the 51st. I checked this because I wasn't sure, but it is the 51st. But yeah, happy 51st, Steph. Congratulations for being on this show. And then in terms of the Super Chat, it was so fun, that match. Some of the spots were just incredible. That it came out of nowhere, that table spot. So for people that haven't seen it, Brian Cage is in the ring, and he just picks up, like in a gorilla press, picks up Darby Allin, and then just chucks him outside the ring through a table, which, to be fair, I probably should have expected something like that coming with Darby Allin in the ring, who just seems to have a death wish to throw himself off things and just do whatever he wants. But the spots in this match were so cool. Even the coffin drop on Brian Cage to the outside, so good. I don't actually think we gave this match enough credit when we were running down the show. It was really good.
It's great to see two opposite people, both physically, personality, everything, be able to come together and make something as great as that and use each other's strengths of what they could do. And also, what was also great about it was Cage got so much in on Darby, but Darby didn't look weak because he's kicking out at one on a lot of the spots, and he still managed to look strong even while being chucked the whole way around the ring. It was incredible.
It was so good. The whole thing was so good, and I loved it. I thought it was such a good match. I think that it was also a nice touch to have the AW World Title match happen last week and the TNT title match go on this week, because it makes them feel like equals. Like either one can main event, and they feel like the same level. I really liked it, but yeah, I agree with you, Chris. The spots were crazy.
Another thing AEW is doing really well is making this TNT title, the secondary title, really seem very important, which I think WWE doesn't do a lot of the time with their Intercontinental title. But this is almost like how the Intercontinental title was for a while in New Japan, where it can main event TV shows and you can have like such a big story that people get invested in, you know, in the TNT title. There will be times, I'm sure, when the TNT title storyline has people way more invested than the world title storyline.
Yeah, I think even I would say now with Sting being involved, but then you've got Kenny Omega involved. And it's not to say that the TNT title isn't exciting. It's just the AEW world title scene. It's just it's hard to pick which one you prefer most. We've actually got a hot take here from WrestleScope that I want to dive into, because they've got an interesting take on women's wrestling, but I think will be cool for us to dive into. So let's check that one out.
Hey, Steph and Louis, it's John from WrestleScope, and here's my hot take. Divas era women's wrestling storylines were so much better than what we have going on Raw and AEW right now. AEW's women's division is a mess. Raw, we don't even know what's going on with the champion. Vince has ruined it completely. It's all about blonde hair and big boobs right now. Look at Lacey Evans. Bring back Divas era wrestling, because there was at least good storylines.
John has my favorite voice.
John has a very good voice. What do you think about his hot take, though?
You know, I can understand what he's saying. Oh, especially when it comes to WWE, I think that their women's storylines aren't great a lot of the time. And I think that I've always thought like the Divas era kind of gets a bad rap because people kind of judge it on what was put upon the women, like them being called divas and them being given a butterfly belt. But there was a lot of great talent at that time, and there were some good storylines that got people invested. And when it comes to, you know, putting, giving blondes that look a certain way, you know, everything, that still happens today. Yeah. That still does happen today. They haven't got rid of that. So I do totally, you know, I see with what he's saying, and I agree with it too. We know that AEW women's division needs a lot of work. Like, we know that. And I think it's finding the time for it. And I think maybe when they start this second show that Tony Khan's been talking about, we could see more of a focus on women. I think the NXT women do great, but as far as main roster, it seems to be just a rotation of the same people. And then there are people that just never get a break. Like, someone that I always think of, like Dana Brooke, never gets a break. And there's people that I'd push a lot more, like Shayna Baszler, but they're very focused on Charlotte. They're very focused on that core four horsewoman.
It is difficult.
Lacey Evans. Charlotte. I was just going to say, like, Lacey Evans is good, but I think they're higher on her than they should be. She is someone that almost feels very forced upon us.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that they obviously like the fact she's a former Marine. That is something that they'll always like. And
But they don't know how to give her a character with it. It's they tell us she's a former Marine and she's a mom. So you think, okay, wow, that's amazing. Then they make her this horrible, you know, person that's just nasty to everyone. But yet you've been told her, you know, great sympathetic backstory. And then they had the weird thing with Ric Flair, where I thought you just told us that she's a mom that has her kid and her husband in the audience all the time. So what's like going on here? It's an absolute muddled mess of who they want her to be.
You know, I agree. And like the thing with AEW is you could never say that the women, like, especially recently, the women have been given time in their matches. Like, Tay Conti and Serena Deeb had no story. Like, there was no storyline going into it, but they were given a lot of time, and Tay Conti came out looking great. Serena Deeb is just great. And I think that sometimes that's lacking on Raw as well, where, like, the women are involved in short matches. I think SmackDown's better, definitely, in terms of, like, Sasha Banks and Bayley were sort of really doing well. Then you have Carmella, who's been thrown in the mix and has looked, I think, has really improved. She's done some of her best work. And then you've got Bianca Belair, who's coming through and so I think starting to get the credit and the sort of respect she deserves from WWE. But yeah, on Raw, the storylines are muddled. I mean, Asuka hasn't defended her title in a match over 3 minutes since September, which is crazy. Yeah. Like, I mean, with AEW, at least you can say that, listen, the stories might not always be there and they might not always be great, but they will always say, all right, the women can have a slot, go out there and show what you can do. And they do always show what they can do in the ring, which I think is sometimes missing from WWE.
Yeah. I think the Tay Conti Serena Deeb match was really, really good. And Tay Conti is she's great, and she's kind of a good example of how WWE developmental can really let people down, because she's improved so much since leaving there. And I think that with her and Serena, they could have filled us in a bit more and given us like a real life story, because she probably would have trained her, like they would have worked together, and there was something, you know, they could have put something like that in. But as well with Tay Conti and the relationship she has with Anna Jay, I like that, and I hope that's explored more, because that, to me, I look at them and I see how they interact, and I'm 100% by that they're best friends in real life, whereas Mandy and Dana, I don't buy their friendship at all. And Mandy and Dana, they're being put together because they're both blonde, so they look alike. But we know that Mandy's real life best friend is Sonya, who she's the opposite to. And those two together were able to convey an actual friendship more than her and Mandy. And Tay Conti and Anna, I totally buy into that. And I want to see more of them interacting together.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's, as you say, WWE is often in a thing where, especially with the women's tag titles, they're like, all right, let's shoehorn these two women together because they seem like they look similar, so they'll be friends. But as you say, yeah. Anna Jay and Tay Conti don't look similar, but you buy the fact they're actually friends, probably because yeah. they actually are friends. Same with, I mean, in WWE, like we had with Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, like we had with Peyton Royce and Billie Kay. I feel that sort of way with Ruby Riot and Liv Morgan, but with sort of like Mandy and Dana Brooke, like, I'm not saying they're not friends, but on TV, they don't look like the sort of people where in a tag team, one of them would go out of their way to really help the other person. And like, it's they're like, how do I work? Like, so FTR, for example, I cannot imagine Dax appearing on TV without cash. Like, I think yeah. it would be weird. And that's the same with, that's complete, like, that's what you want from a tag team. But with Dana Brooke and Mandy Rose, it almost feels weird to see them together, not on their own, if that makes any sense. It feels like they've really been shoehorned yeah. into a position where it's like, all right, you guys must be friends. But I do completely agree yeah. with the AW point from last night. They should have had, like, even if it's a slight video package of Tay Conti being like, I want to prove to you that, like, I'm better than you or whatever because you used to train me. Because they mentioned that briefly on commentary, but it didn't feel like an integral part of the story, which I think could have taken a minute and could have really helped.
I remember when I was when I spoke to FTR, that they told me about how when they watched tag teams as kids, they truly believed that they were best friends and that's what they wanted, and that's why they don't like tag team breakup stories. And I kind of feel the same, that, and I think that they should, you know, that's why the Iconics breaking up seems so bad, because you do truly want to believe that these people are best friends. You do want to buy into that storyline that they do everything together. And to be honest, if a tag team is not totally invested in each other and being a team, then why are you a team? Why doesn't Mandy Rose just go chase the singles title? Because she's got no connection to Dana Brooke. Whereas the Iconics, if they've gone up and grown up and done everything together, like, of course they'd want to be tag team wrestlers and chase the tag team titles.
Yeah, Matthew's brought up an interesting point here. They had a segment on the Road to YouTube, wish they had played that video on Dynamite. Yeah, I think one of the issues with AW sometimes is they assume that everyone watches everything. So if I watch AW, I also watch Dark, I also watch Being the Elite, I also watch the Road to stuff. And with the amount of wrestling going on, there just isn't, I think it's a lot to ask people that.
Yeah. So
for example, I always go back to the Scorpio Sky when he wrestled Cody on Dynamite, coming off that massive winning streak in the summer. Because none of those matches were on Dynamite,
yeah.
I was just a regular Dynamite watcher, I'm like, who is this guy and why do I think he's got any chance? But
yeah.
they could show some of those matches, have basically it feel more like an integrated world. But as you were saying with the women's stuff earlier, I think once they get their second show and they have more time to do stuff, that we are going to start seeing sort of AW explain stories slightly more that might not be in sort of the main bubble of storylines like the Kenny Omega stuff.
I would love to see more of these great video packages because they do them so well. And yeah. like the Darby Brian Cage package was awesome. It got me really excited. And a lot of the stuff that they show on Road 2s, they should put a little bit on Dynamite because, as you said, like not everyone's me. You know, not everyone's watching everything. Yeah. But then I did feel when I saw the Dark Order segment, I almost felt that was for people that don't watch Being the Elite. Because if you watch yeah. Being the Elite, you do know that they're nice, friendly, as I always call them, like my favorite friendly neighborhood cult. Like, you know how nice they are. And that does need to be portrayed more to the Dynamite viewer. And I think that little segment was bringing that world into the Dynamite world.
Yeah, I have just seen a wild Alex McCarthy in the comments checking up on us.
Wow.
Behaving. But yeah, Alex, hope you're enjoying yourself in Abu Dhabi, being a proper journalist, being sent out to places while I just sit in my room. We've got one more Ultra Chat here today. We've actually got a few, but we'll do one more here. If you guys want to get in your Ultra Chats, head on over to wrestletalk.com/wrestle2. Any topics, comments, questions, we will answer all of them before the end of the show. One here from WrestleScope, who actually submitted in the hot take that we were just talking about. Hey, Stefan Lurie. Yeah. I think the FTW title is a giant waste of time. Why have a belt that is never defended? It was cool when Taz first brought it back out, but since then it's been a waste. I actually think that it would be weird if it is defended, because they put over that it's not recognized by AEW. So if AEW started announcing, you know, when like Jim Ross goes, oh, here's what we got next week. If he went, oh, we've got Brian Cage defending the FEW title, it'd be like, all right, so can I just now debut a title and automatically have it defended and be a title holder? So I actually think I would like to see more stuff done, but I don't think AEW should, for example, announce matches and be like, all right, the FTW title will be defended tonight. How do you feel about sort of how the FTW title is being used and maybe what they can do in 2021 to make us care about it a bit more?
I've never seen it as a title in anything but how it looks. I almost see it as their heels, and this is something that Taz, he gives to his favorite guy. You know, he gives it to Brian Cage. He gives it to a person that's worthy of it. So I don't need to see it defended or anything. I would more like to see, you know, Brian Cage, after losing to Darby Allin, Taz, you know, say to him, maybe you're not good enough for the FTW title. I think what they could build to with it is Ricky Starks taking the title, because he's obviously showing so much promise and he kind of actually feels like the main guy in that faction anyway, and him kind of just coming up behind Brian Cage and Taz, you know, in the end stripping Cage of the title and giving it to Ricky Starks. And if this Team Taz, if it goes on for another couple of years, then maybe Hook will be the next recipient of it as well. So I see it more, I think, you know, yes, it's a title, but I see it more as a cool fashion accessory that Taz gives out to people rather than a towel. Something a bit more fancy than him just handing them a towel.
It's a fancy towel. I do want to...
That's, please make that the title, is the FTW title just a fancy towel.
Yeah, I think that's we've clipped that. We're going to get some a pissed off Taz coming after us. But before we talk about the NXT show last night and a little bit more news, I want to touch on the AEW awards. Actually, that picture is far too small for me to even show. So I will just read them out. Some of them were slightly controversial, I thought. So for example, for best moment, so for those that haven't seen, the AEW awards are going to be done on Bleacher Report next week. They will basically, I think, be a more legitimate version of the Slammies. They are to be voted on by fans. It's going to be sort of the moments of AEW so far, like all from last year. But some of them were slightly interesting. So, for example, best moment on the mic, we had MJF, we deserve better speech. Cody Rhodes accepting the dog collar match. Jon Moxley accepts Inner Circle's invitation. Brandi Rhodes confronts Jade Cargill. And Orange Cassidy debates Chris Jericho. We have no Eddie Kingston there, which is weird.
Odd. That's really odd. Kingston, well, I know what I picked the Brody Lee promo for promo of the year, but and I can see that was a short promo, so it probably wouldn't qualify, whatever. But not having Kingston in a best mic thing, no. And also Moxley did better promos than that.
He
did much better, like his Omega promo. That's not even the Moxley one you'd pick. So yeah, that's very odd.
So biggest surprise was Matt Hardy's debut. Jake the Snake Roberts confronts Cody. Brody Lee arrives in AEW as the Exalted One. Sting's debut and Miro's debut, which I'm like, okay, fine. We got the breakout star, which is Orange Cassidy, Darby Allin, Eddie Kingston, and John Silver. No Ricky Starks, who I think should really be on that list.
I honestly think that they are, because John Silver is someone that got himself over and being the elite, and they're letting shine. I think they aren't ready to let Ricky Starks shine yet, because you know they have a plan that they're trying to execute, and Ricky Starks has just got himself over quicker than before. So I don't think that they want to yet promote Ricky Starks as the star that he is just yet, because I think if fans were putting forward the nominations, Ricky Starks would be in that.
So those two were the only sort of really controversial ones. And I get that these aren't anything to lose sleep about or anything to sort of not watch AW for. But not putting Eddie Kingston in best promo and Ricky Starks' breakout style was a little bit, when I was reading through them, I was like, really? Is that a mistake?
I'm sure Eddie Kingston was like, really?
I just don't get it. But anywho, there's nothing too sort of dramatic or important. And we have got some more news to get into, so we'll do that now. And the sort of title news today is about Roosh of Ring of Honor and the fact he has basically, WWE has basically turned him down, which is a bit surprising. So a report from Wrestling Inc. states that Roosh was represented by a AAA in negotiations and WWE made him an offer. Roosh apparently wasn't happy with the offer, and WWE decided not to sign him, believing his asking price was too high, which is interesting because WWE have never been the sort of people to shy away from signing people. It's always like, all right, you available? Yeah. Okay, we'll get you. It's pretty surprising that they're not in for him. I'm not going to pretend to know a great deal about him, but all from the matches I have seen of Roosh, he does seem fantastic and someone that would have been a great addition to NXT and then later on the main roster if WWE did decide to sign him. So it is a bit surprising that they haven't, that they've passed up on this.
It is, and I can see why he took the chance of making his asking price bigger in this climate. But yeah. I mean, unfortunate for him. But you know, he is a very talented guy, and I'm sure you know he's got someone else will pick him up, or maybe WWE will pick him up in a while. But yeah, that is surprising that he priced himself out of WWE, who seemed to have opened the doors to everyone.
Yeah, and listen, there's someone else that might be on the move that. I'm sure you're not very happy about. So Jay White, who could be heading out of New Japan. He was actually removed from the roster page today. I personally think this is a storyline. I think this is just a storyline that they're doing. I don't think he's done with New Japan. You must be incredible. You must have lost sleep over this. I know that move has been hectic, but you must have lost sleep thinking that your beloved Jay White might end up in the hands of Vince McMahon.
I know. I lose more sleep over knowing that I have to go on Twitter and see everyone talking about Jay White. that just annoys me, like, please. But I think it's a storyline as well. And as I said on Twitter myself, nice commitment, removing from the roster page. That's just, that takes no work. So, you know, that's great. I hope he stays with New Japan. Everyone knows I hope he stays with New Japan. I can't imagine what they do to him in WWE unless he's going to start the revolution and be the first person that they actually, you know, use correctly and get what they deserve to. But I'm going to hold my breath. You know, if he does go to WWE, he better freaking bypass NXT, debut in the Royal Rumble and win it, and then go on to win the title and just become the number one guy, untouchable guy on top for the next 5 years. But I don't see that happening. I think he will stay with New Japan, and I think that he and New Japan know that this is the perfect time to execute the storyline. It's January. Not only is it January, the wrestling world at the minute, it's all in a complete like tizzy because of what's going on with AEW and Impact and everything. Like, no one knows what's what, and I think that they've picked a good time to do a really good storyline as a way of bringing him back as a sympathetic babyface character, because all these fans that, you know, didn't really like him or didn't like his character, they're all going to be feeling the pang of missing him, and once he comes back, he'll be more popular than ever.
So So you want him to stay with New Japan. I think he should stay with New Japan. But someone that doesn't is Abhinav, who has sent in a hot take that I think we should.
Okay.
I don't think this is the worst idea in the world, actually.
Daily Fam, Louis, and hopefully Steph Chase, who is the only person I know that's as big a Jay White fan as myself. So breathe with the switchblade and all. I think that Jay White should go to AEW and start a feud with Kenny Omega and be basically Kenny Omega's next challenger, because if you remember, Jay White was the one person who was undefeated against Kenny, and he did beat him for the IWGP US title, and then that could later on lead to a Bullet Club versus Bullet Club feud. Thank you very much.
Okay. Do you want me to just dive in?
Go. I think I'm not qualified enough on the topic, especially with you here, to have the first say on any Jay White news. So I will let you take this one first.
Like him, if he has to leave New Japan, him going to AEW would be the best option. The best option. Him and Kenny, they had a great match together in New Japan. He does hold victories over Kenny. There is a built-in feud there, and it would make a lot of sense for him to turn up in AEW as the an ex-Bullet Club leader against an ex-Bullet Club leader. And also, you know, he's the one that came after him, and he threw a shirt at him and then ended up, you know, taking over the faction. But I think the best thing we could possibly hope for, if you want to do Jay White and Kenny having a great feud, is AEW and New Japan just getting a relationship together. And I think that's the best way to do a Bullet Club versus Bullet Club feud, is for that relationship to happen. And we don't know if it's ever going to happen. We don't know what it will take to make it happen. But the most authentic Bullet Club versus Bullet Club feud that you could have would be putting New Japan and AEW together and getting Kenny and getting Jay to have that cross-brand, cross-promotion feud.
No, I agree. I think that it is obviously not difficult, but no one knows. I think people got a little bit ahead of themselves towards the end of last year with the whole sort of Kenta stuff, thinking that Kenta was going to come into it.
Yes.
And I don't think it's a particularly bad thing to get excited, but I personally don't think a New Japan relationship is on the cards. But I think this could be a great way to do it, where if New Japan are smart, they would say, all right, so we've got this Jay White thing going. Let's send him to AEW for a month, sort of work on that relationship with AEW, build up a bit of intrigue, make it seem like he's left, and then have him return. I think that there are definitely a lot of sort of storylines that I would I think that'd be great. But the only issue is, I don't think him versus Kenny now makes it does make sense, but I don't think I'd want to see it. Both are so hot now, and ultimately with a feud, yes, you can both come out looking great, but someone has to lose, and I don't want either of them to lose anytime soon.
I think that'd
be a great way to have Bullet Club combust and have New Japan and AEW Bullet Clubs basically just war with each other.
I think when we talk about a New Japan AEW relationship, I think people want it more to be like a marriage, but it can just be like a very casual, we can see each other people fling type thing, rather than like an actual marriage. And it you could do things like, okay, we need Moxley to defend his US title against Kenta. We'll let Moxley. We'll give you Moxley to do that. He can do it on American soil, whatever, or you put him on a boat in the middle of the ocean, whatever. And then you send us Jay White, who lives in Florida anyway, for a couple of matches, you know, just to tease something even bigger. Like, I would like to see them get to the point where they can do these little exchanges like that, which I think are more interesting than saying New Japan and AEW have this marriage where we're always going to see them together and it's a proper working relationship. Could be just something more, you know, more casual.
I like the sound of that. I think you've worded that perfectly. But yeah, I think that we saw that a little bit at the beginning with obviously Jericho going over and Moxie going over, but it was very much one-sided. We haven't seen any, and I can see why Tony Khan would probably be like, hey, I'm not going to keep sending people over. If you're not sending anyone back, it's a very one-way street. So yeah, I think that would be a great way to start it, but who knows whether that is on the cards or not. I don't think so. I think we'll probably I think we'll probably see Jay White sticking with New Japan, which I think for him is probably the best thing. Going to WWE would be pretty bad. Pretty bad. But someone that did debut last night was MSK, or formerly the Rascals. So Zachary Wentz and Desmond Xavier, who are now, and I can't believe I'm about to say this, so Nash Carter, which is fine for Zachary Wentz. Desmond Xavier's name is Wes Lee. So Wesley Lee, which is just awful. The name is awful. But they came in looking really good in their Dusty Cup match. They had a great match with Isaiah Swerve Scott and Jake Atlas, who I think are two fantastic wrestlers. So to put them in there with MSK was definitely a smart call, a right decision. But I don't know whether. So I think they'll definitely progress to the final. I just don't know how the group's going to work, obviously, without Trey Miguel, who currently hasn't decided where he's going to go. He's reportedly fielding offers from WWE and AEW. From what you have seen of, obviously, their debut, what did you think? And do you think the group will sort of be of a detriment if they don't find a way to bring in Trey Miguel?
No, I think that they can work as a tag team, and I think, you know, they're in NXT now, they're getting a fresh start, and most of that audience isn't going to know them as a trio, I think. So I don't think it should hold them back at all. I think they looked good, they looked strong, and this Dusty Cup is a really good way to bring them in, and a really exciting way as well. But yeah, with the names in WWE, it's a really potluck is what you get, isn't it?
We just know that Desmond Xavier is going to be brought up to the main roster at some stage as Keith Lee's brother, and it's going to be Keith Lee and Wesley. It's going to happen. It is literally just a matter of time. But I don't even want to think about it, but it will happen. I thought that NXT was also really good last night. Pete Dunne versus Finn Balor being set up is awesome. That is a match that I think anyone who likes New Japan, not New Japan, likes British wrestling will appreciate. That is a match between two people who are, I'd probably say, two of British wrestling's best exports. And if that happens to TakeOver, we'll probably steal the show. So I'm very much looking forward to that. And Xia Li looked really good. Like, I'm really digging what they're doing with her now. For oftentimes, and we spoke about it with Tay Conti earlier, WWE is great at bringing people in like a Io Shirai, who are all like a sort of people that are already established, like a Candice LeRae, and doing well with them. But they haven't done well with people that they've sort of cultivated on their own and who aren't big names, possibly with the exception of Bianca Belair. I thought they're doing really great stuff with Xia Li now. I'm really interested in her character. Whatever's going on with this sort of like Chinese dungeon, whatever the hell it is, I'm really interested. How about you? Are you looking forward to see what happens next with Xia Li and enjoying what they're doing with her now?
Yeah, I am. I think it's some of the videos were quite strange, and you just didn't know what was going on, but they still got me intrigued and they still got me thinking, and that's really all you can hope for. But I think she's looked really good recently, and it is just nice to see them focus on her and give her an actual storyline. Like, whatever this is, one thing you can't deny is that it's a storyline. She has something concrete going on, and that's excellent to see, especially for a woman on the roster.
So, this might be one of the funniest comments I've ever seen. So, we were talking about how Wesley is going to be Keith Lee's brother. Does this mean Xia Li is going to be Keith Lee's sister? I think it works. It does work.
It works.
Really?
They have a huge Lee family.
As long as they're not sort of dressing up as Bobby Lashley's sisters, and they're Bobby Lashley's family, they're Keith Lee's family, I'll be very happy. Let's see. What other bits from NXT that went on last night? I think that... So I don't know about you. Well, I'm going to remove that. I don't know about you, but I really, really like grizzled young veterans. I think they are like incredible. And I'm really happy that we're starting to, like, I think the pandemic hurt them more than most people in NXT. Like Rhea Ripley, yeah, it wasn't great for. But I think with grizzled young veterans, they have so much potential and they were starting to show it. But unfortunately, obviously, with the pandemic, they were stuck over here in the UK. So as someone, obviously, from the UK as well, have you enjoyed seeing grizzled young veterans? And do you think that maybe their potential isn't just on NXT, that we could see them potentially on the main roster eventually?
I think they're great. I think they're fantastic, both in-ring and Gibson's promos, too. I think they're really great. I think that I would love to see them flourish on the main roster, but they seem like such an NXT tag team, if you know what I mean. Like, they have that edge to them,
yep,
that NXT tag teams seem to have. I think I see NXT tag teams, if I'm going by colors, as like a very dark colors, whereas the Raw and SmackDown tag teams, I see like bright primary colors, and they just seem to be like too edgy for the main roster or something, you know.
I know.
Yeah, like Street Profits had a good edge to them in NXT, and then you bring them up to the main roster and it's, you know, Viking Raiders skits and stuff, and I can't imagine Grizzled Young Veterans doing skits, but they'd probably be really funny at it. But it would be one of those things where it's funny, but at the same time you're like, but I want better for you, and I'm sorry for laughing, because laughing is actually bad, because then you're encouraging it. You're encouraging more of it.
It's like a kid that misbehaves, and like your younger sibling, and your mom's like, don't laugh, because they think it's funny. They think it's a game. And it's the same thing. Yeah. When we laugh about what WWE does, like, so when I've always thought this, so the YouTube numbers for the whole ending segment to Raw, when Alexa Bliss like threw a fireball around the audience's face, the YouTube numbers are so high. So you can see why WWE keeps doing stupid stuff like this, because it works, and it's really, like, in terms of the numbers, it really works. But in terms of like making sense, it's awful. I do want to bring this up as well from Uptown Avondale. So Keith Lee, Wesley, and Zia Lee, the family, that is really good. So like really, really.
That's
good.
One of the best comments we've ever had. The YouTube numbers at the ending of Raw, I did not add to those numbers, as you can imagine. I'm not going to watch or rewatch that kind of nonsense happening. But it hits on YouTube. And the problem with, you know, I was watching a video the other day, not about wrestling, but about YouTube and how it works. And this girl was talking about someone problematic and was saying, you know, if you leave, if you go and comment on that video or comment on my video, even if you say you don't like me, that adds to my number of comments. So my video is like getting all this engagement and will be popped up higher. So with the bad WWE stuff that does really well on YouTube, you know, it's no indication of whether it's good or not. But unfortunately, the high numbers means they see it as, well, it's working. Whether people love it or hate it, they're going to watch it. And that leads to bad/lazy writing, if you're just churning out what will make people watch regardless of whether it's bad or good.
No, I completely agree with you. I think it's, in WWE's mind, I think no press, like, press isn't ever bad. Like, press is always good. Like, they get coverage, no matter if it's bad or good. That if their product's getting out there, that's the main thing. And it's the same thing on Twitter. Like, if someone disagrees with an article or disagrees with something someone's done, if they keep like quote tweeting it or commenting on it, it's just going to show up on more people's timelines. So it is that double-edged sword where, as you say, if people comment on it, even sort of negative things, it is just going to get shared around more. But I want to head out of here on the dot. So I think we're going to do an Alex. We've bucked the trend of Alex McCarthy on Wrestling Daily at the moment, where we're always finishing on time, whereas Alex McCarthy is slowly, every couple of weeks, it's another couple of minutes. We're soon
going he's reckless.
He's reckless.
What a reckless host. You show him how it's done, Larry.
I will. We've got one here from Bo Hill. If you want to get in your Ultra Chats quickly before we do head out, head on over to wrestletalk.com/wrestle2. Any comments, anything you want, basically, us to talk about, we will. One here from Bo Hill. What's your favorite non-finisher by a particular wrestler? So Walter's Chop, for example. I would have to go with Kenny Omega's Snapdragon Suplex, one of my favorite things to see in wrestling. What is a move that isn't a finisher that I really like? That's not... Have you got one?
I'm just going to say Jay White doing the Kiwi Crusher because it's... it's not his proper finisher anymore. Gosh, Walter's Chops are great though.
Walter's Chops was a good show.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to my favorite page on Wikipedia, WWE roster page. And we're going to quickly write, I'm going to quickly have a look down the roster and see, because I do not have a clue what I'm, okay, I'll tell you what, I've actually thought of it. You know the move, right? Where AJ Styles normally does it. He's on the top rope and then he flips over them and goes straight into the DDT. That one. I like that one. I think that's smooth.
Yeah.
Also a Canadian Destroyer, because it's never
Canadian Destroyer.
Never uses a finisher anymore, which is a shame.
It's never. And it would kill me. And yet it's not used as a finisher.
But
you just watch it. And it's you watch it and you almost can't understand how it works. But I must say that I'm still someone that loves a good Hurricane Rana.
Hurricane Rana's good. I quite like a Poison Rana as well, so the reverse. I think, you know what? Wrestling's good. Wrestling's really good. We don't say that enough. Wrestling's good.
We don't say that enough. Wrestling is great.
Oh, we got one more here from WrestleScope, actually. Could the AW Impact crossover open the door to more crossovers in American wrestling? Like the old territory days. Champions spend a month or on another brand. NWA, Ring of Honor, MLW, Nick Aldis in AEW. I don't know, to be honest, whether it's going to open the door for more. I think it will set up like a precedent for stuff like this happening. But I think it'll be one promotion sticking together as opposed to sort of a whole host of promotions coming together. I would like to see it though, because I think like I have never been more excited for Impact Wrestling than I have with AEW. So I think any promotion should probably be smart and realize, all right, working together just seems like the best business. It seems to get people talking, seems to get YouTube numbers up, seems to get every just interest as a whole up. So let's do it. Do you think that maybe 2021 will be the year that we start seeing more like sort of the old territory days with US at least domestic promotions?
Not really. I think the excitement with AEW and Impact is because it hasn't been done before. Like obviously AEW did bring in the NWA Women's Champion and stuff, but that's a much smaller promotion than Impact is. So I think that that's where the excitement lies. I think, for example, I don't see WWE is ever going to properly work with other promotions other than the small UK ones that they just swallow up. Because what's in it for WWE, like really there's nothing in it for them, because I think a lot of their fan base, me and you, people like me and you that are really hardcore into wrestling are in a little bubble where we think that people watching Raw care about Impact or AEW and no such and such. They don't. Like, they don't. There's no need for WWE to work with another promotion. Their fans would be sitting at home going, who are these people? There's other wrestling? What? Like, I thought you guys were the only company. And I think that with AEW, they've gone all out with this big Impact relationship, and that kind of should be it, at least for a long time, because once you start overdoing it, you know, it's not right. If you want to bring in Nick Aldis for a match, then that's cool, but I think that other promotions that should work together are maybe like MLW and an NWA, something like that, the even smaller ones, that they could really benefit from it.
Yeah, no, I do agree. I think that, like you say with WWE, if AEW and WWE ever had a working relationship, they never will. But AEW would be benefiting from that so much. Like, so much more than WWE. AEW has fantastic wrestlers, but I think people would be naive to suggest that, say, Kenny Omega comes over to AEW for a run. He's not going to be able to have Kenny Omega matches. He's going to be able to have the sort of matches that AJ Styles have and Daniel Bryan have, who are fantastic wrestlers but aren't really able to show it. So I think until WWE gets out of that mindset we're not going to see any crossover with them. But in terms of other promotions, yeah, I think, as you say, a MLW and NWA, stuff like that could work. Or, yeah, or a Ring of Honor and a NWA. We sort of started to see that. I think that the smaller promotions working together is definitely the way we should go with this. Final Ultra Chat here from Matty. Hey, Louis. Hey, Steph. Sorry for the lack of Ultra Chats. College work has been horrendous. You and me both, Matty. Steph, how's the flat? Completely random question for you both. How did you get a start in wrestling journalism? I'll go on then. I'll start with you for that one, Steph. How's the flat, and how did you get your start in wrestling journalism?
The flat is great. Thank you. Just, you know, finishing off the final bits. But so how did I get my start in wrestling journalism? It was something that I always wanted to do, always tried to do. I got a degree in journalism, and you know, you can't just walk into a wrestling journalism job. So I was doing other stuff, but mostly entertainment stuff. So the first place I worked for, I had a lot of freedom to do whatever entertainment stories I wanted to do. So I did a lot of WWE based stories, you know, anytime something big that would happen in WWE. Like, for example, around this time was like when Jon Stewart showed up, stuff like that, anything that you could work in to be in entertainment. Yeah. And then I started working at Digital Spy that has a WWE section. And I was like, hey, I can do this. Like, this is what I want to do and be what I'm really passionate about. So I was just, yeah, lucky enough to choose places to work for that already were doing some coverage of WWE, but not enough coverage of WWE where you could put yourself forward and say that I can be that person to take it to the next level.
Yeah, so my story is completely different. I was in university first year. I was like, all right, I'm really bored because I had 9 hours of lessons a week and just nothing to do. Obviously nothing to do that when I wasn't sort of in like during the days. So I was like, all right, yeah. I was a fan of WrestleTalk. So I just subscribed to the channel. And I think Ollie mentioned on a video like, oh, we're always looking for new writers. So I emailed and that's how I got started. And then sort of becoming a writer turned into becoming an editor, and then becoming an editor turned into just breaking news and interviewing people and just sort of moving my way up through WrestleTalk. So yeah, I'm actually coming up to 2 years in wrestling media, which is
That's crazy. It is crazy that you can. It's crazy you can love something as much as we love wrestling, and then actually have it be your job. It's really awesome.
It is the weirdest thing where I always used to remember my parents would be like, "Oh, are you going to watch? Like, don't watch the wrestling because it ends quite late, and then you get quite cranky in the mornings." When I used to go to bed at like 4 and then get woken up at 7 for school on 3 hours sleep. Yeah. But now I can be like, it's work. I'm doing work.
Yeah.
I'm allowed to work.
For me, I'm more at people just saying like, why are you watching wrestling? It's pointless, and watching wrestling will never come to anything. And here I am.
I had a Zoom call with my friends. I'll tell the story quickly. I had a Zoom call with my friends last night. And so obviously they know what I do, but one friend was like, so you cover the wrestling where they don't actually hit each other, right? I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, so you do the wrestling where like they know who's gonna win, yeah? I'm like, yeah. So they're like, so why'd you watch it? I'm like, so do you think when you watch Friends, for example, that Ross and Rachel are actually like, they're not actually having a kid together? It's not real. I was like, this is the same thing. It's not real. It's people acting it, but it is athletically impressive acting as opposed to just regular acting. So I'm sure you've had that before, having to explain to people.
Oh, it's the worst. But I've more had, and I don't know if you've ever had this, like people not getting that it's something that can be covered. Like I was with my friends once, and I was listening to Observer Radio. Their mind was blown that there was stuff to say about wrestling. Yeah. That there was like news breakdown of like they were going like, but it's not real. Like, why are they talking about matches that aren't real? Why are they talking about like news for the? And I'm saying there's more going on in wrestling than in any other like form of entertainment or sport that you could cover. There's so much. You know, every day there's something.
We did a quiz on Zoom once, and it was like, so the person doing the quiz was like, all right, there's like a person, not like a personal round, but each question was a question about someone. So the question for me was, how many articles have I written for WrestleTalk? So they asked me, how many articles have you written? And I think at the time I'd done like 3,500. So they were like, wait, you've written 3,500 articles for WrestleTalk? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, what can you write about for wrestling, like news? I'm like, you have no idea what we can write about. We will turn anything into a story. But there is often a lot of news that people don't cover. I mean, we've gone 6 minutes over here, even though I was just saying how we're not going to go over. And I feel like we could talk for hours about how wrestling media is all confusing. But Steph and I are actually going to be back tomorrow on the Friday show, covering news, covering whatever else we want to talk about. So we actually didn't do any AW Revolution predictions. So maybe we'll do some of them tomorrow.
We could maybe do it tomorrow, yeah.
We'll do it tomorrow. But yeah, guys, thank you very much for obviously tuning in today. And tuning in over the last couple of weeks or so. Rehashing that.
Just a great comment.
Flash that up again. But yeah, we're sticking by as when we've had some sort of schedule changes with everything that's been going on with Alex and his busy journalism life. So yeah, thank you very much for tuning in, guys. If you want to check out Steph's Twitter, that's Stephanie M. Chase. Go on, give us the plugs. Where else can people find you? Keep up with what you've got going on. You've got your show tomorrow night, right?
Yeah, I'm doing my AEW weekly show tomorrow night at 11:30 p.m. So a bit after we finish, 2.5 hours after we finish tomorrow. So if you love AEW and love talking about AEW, come hang out with me, send me your chats. It's, you know, sometimes on this show, maybe I can be a bit negative, but I'm telling you, AEW weekly is the most positive show on YouTube because we are always happy and having a great time enjoying AEW.
Awesome. Yeah, Steph, I've never seen someone smile more when they talk about AW and then someone frown more when they talk about WWE. But yeah, guys, we will see you tomorrow. And yeah, see you guys.
Bye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to Amazon.com/sports-ad-free. That's Amazon.com/sports-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.